Welcome to the VVV podcast.
Hi, Grover. How are you?
Very well, thank you, sir. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you very much, Jo, for joining in. So I think we can start if you're ready. Will anyone else from C join in?
Or? Just myself here. Happy to be here. Okay. Happy to be here.
Perfect. All right. So thank you very much. Yeah. Let me introduce our today's guest. Grover is the head of the ecosystem at Say Network. And Say is building the first application-specific layer one blockchain, which is optimized for trading and DeFi applications. So welcome, Grover, to our today's show.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for introducing. I'm just looking at the audience here. It'd be good maybe if I just run through the initial Say pitch and just sort of give some context on my background.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So I started in crypto in sort of 2017, and went through that sort of first bull and bear. Learned quite a lot. I also got into the sort of the Terra ecosystem back in sort of 2021, 2020, which turned out to be quite a good move. So started building up my first project actually on Terra, which was a project called Retrograde. And we were the first sort of convex type protocol, which for those who aren't aware, is sort of like a DeFi project. We got 50 mil TVL in that first weekend. But then we all know what happened to Terra. So I actually met Jeff through a Terra connection, which was sort of back around this time last year, actually. And he was building out Say. So at that point, I decided we were going to build out the Vortex, which is a perpetuals exchange, which would be the first app that would launch on Say. To cut a very long story short, we recently sold SushiSwap to the project of SushiSwap. And took on sort of a role at as part of the core team on Say, and my responsibilities now is to look after the ecosystem, which projects are launching, when are they going to launch, who's going to be here, what gaps are there in the ecosystem, and just thinking about all of these exciting and interesting things. So yeah, great to be here, sir.
That's amazing to hear. Yeah, so a lot of questions came up from our community. Yeah, so we will also get into this Q&A afterwards. But first of all, maybe you could give us a little introduction of the whole setup and architecture of the Say network and why you decided at first to launch your own blockchain for these specific applications.
Yes.
What was the reason behind?
Yeah, so I guess the best place to start when it comes to Say is we have this one core thesis, which is that exchanges are the most important app in crypto, whether that's on or off chain. So if you're thinking about off chain, if it's Binance or say on chain on Ethereum with Uniswap and OpenSea. So all of these products are then built around the central exchange. So, for example, most of the demand for Aave is from exchanges. And that's the reason you take a loan in the first place is to go and swap and to sort of speculate on those tokens. It's also important in gaming and NFTs. So whether you're looking at Axie's DEX or Steppin's DEX, OpenSea, Magic Eden, everything in crypto sort of comes back to that core exchange. So of all of those applications, and the amount of product market fit that is sort of centered around an exchange, you have to ask the question, how do they scale and get bigger? So today it's not really possible to scale exchanges of existing layer one infrastructure. We try to solve this DEX scaling problem. And the way we do it is to build the best infrastructure for exchanges. And today that looks like a sector specific layer one chain where we optimize absolutely every single element of the stack for that one key product. So everything from top to bottom, from consensus all the way up is optimized for an exchange. Whether you run a DeFi DEX or an NFT DEX or a gaming DEX, it will all have an advantage on Say. Which sort of then, like, if you're considering why would we go ahead and build a specific chain for ourselves, it's primarily that point of having full customization and the ability to change every single element of the stack.
I see. I see. So, what was the reason to go into the Cosmos SDK and Tendermint direction?
Yeah. So we think that Tendermint and Cosmos SDK are pretty well battle tested, and they've have been used for a little while here. And particularly, you know, we saw how they performed through the whole Terra sort of scenario, which is probably as good a stress test as you could put a chain through. And so we thought that was a very good place to start. So we started, rather than sort of going and building everything from scratch, you know, and solving problems that had already been solved several times over, we took Tendermint and we made a few key changes to it. So we call this twin turbo consensus, and that is a combination of two things, which is intelligent block propagation and optimistic block processing. So there's a few nice analogies to sort of explain how these two things work. And I don't know if you want to get into the details there, but we for sure can.
Oh, yes,
Sure.
please. Yeah, so our community is quite
Okay,
technical. Yeah,
great,
so
great.
they would love it. Yeah.
Yeah, so optimistic block processing is probably the easier one to explain. So with Tendermint, you normally have these multiple stages of voting, and then you execute a block. So you receive a block, you vote once, you vote again, and then you execute it. If you're a validator, so nearly all the time that block gets approved. So we become optimistic. Now validators immediately start processing blocks while simultaneously voting. So that helps to decrease the time it takes for execution. And either the block gets approved, so you can commit that block, or it gets rejected. And because you're updating a candidate's step, it automatically resolves and you don't have any kind of surface area for attack there. So the second one, which is a little bit more interesting to explain, is intelligent block propagation. So the analogy that we like to use is, say you have two people, Alice and Bob, and both of them love to read. One day, Alice reads a book that she really likes, such as Harry Potter. And they both have like a library at home. So she goes, they both have a library and they've got their books. She wants to tell Bob, hey, you should really read this book, Harry Potter. It's really good. So either she can say, I'll give you this book tomorrow. So he has to wait a whole day to get the book. Or she can text him and he can start reading the book immediately because he already has it in his library. So the approach where you text and you find it in your own library is much, much easier, and much, much faster. Up till now, Tendermint was using the other approach. So Alice was taking the book to school the next day and giving it to Bob. But what this means in practice, using the correct words, in the block proposal message that say sends, there'll be a list of transaction hashes and that gets sent over the network. So validators can look at a local mempool rather than waiting for the block from the block proposer. So each validator checks that local mempool, and if they do, they can construct the block locally instead of waiting for the block proposal. And we saw something like a 45% improvement in performance based on this. The third sort of significant thing we add is parallelization. And this is the first time I think this has been done on Cosmos. Yeah, that's sort of like the.
That's really impressive, yeah, because I think especially this parallelization of the transactions is quite critical, yeah, if you want to implement it from scratch. So how difficult was this part
Well,
overall?
I know the engineers are very modest, and they'll say no problem at all, but I think it's taken a while. It's taken a while to get there. Yeah, I think you know, a lot of people sort of say, well, you know, what's the trade-off there with adding parallelization? Because obviously it's like a step improvement. You know, everything is just improved by adding it in terms of if you want to optimize for an exchange and you want to optimize for throughput, but obviously then your hardware requirements increase as well. But I think that, you know, if we are looking at optimizing for this specific use case, this is like, you know, we don't necessarily want to optimize for the maximum number of validators, such as on Ethereum. We want to just keep things focused on that single use case.
I see. Yeah, really impressive. Yeah, so everyone that had the experience of, let's say, traditional DEX applications like Uniswap and compared it with centralized exchanges, will see a huge difference, yeah, in terms of performance and functionality. And I think that's a really interesting approach, yeah, to bring those centralized exchange experiences, yeah, back to a real decentralized infrastructure. In terms of throughput, yeah, you mentioned that you tweak the system to maximize the throughput. Do you have some key metrics here? How many transactions can you process, and what is the block finality of the system to achieve this centralized exchange feeling? Yeah.
For sure. I can pull up actually. I'm just looking up. There was a very nice Messari report done the other day, which compared us to some other blockchains. Obviously, we're still on testnet, so like it's important to note, like this is somewhat theoretical, but the time to finality, median time to finality, which is probably one of the most important metrics here. We're looking at 0.6 seconds on Atlantic One. On Atlantic Two, I'm actually just we just launched our Atlantic Two testnet, so I'm just awaiting the final numbers from engineering to sort of compare. But that should be improved again. For context, then I think Aptos is about 0.9 seconds, and Solana even 1 to 2 seconds median, depending on sort of network usage. Again, this is sort of we are on testnet, so the fair comparison will be when we're on mainnet. Theoretical max TPS, we're talking around 22,000, 22K. So that is, I mean, I don't necessarily want to get into the discussion around Ethereum and Ethereum layer twos, but I think there's the upper bound or sort of the limit based on the architecture and the amount of data required per transaction, something like 67, six, maybe 8,000 TPS. On an Ethereum tier, layer two. So, I mean, that often we get asked the question, like, why not build an Ethereum layer two, which is like an eminently sensible thing to do? Like, that's where most of the liquidity is. But we think that we can scale larger, and we can provide a better experience. And look, if we're going to optimize for these high frequency trading strategies and high throughput exchanges, then this is the best option to take.
Amazing, amazing. So I've seen in the documents that you are using a different wording. Yeah, so you're not talking about TPS. You have OPS as a metric. Could you elaborate a little bit on the difference here?
Oh, that's a good question. Do we? you're testing me out here. What was the other acronym? TPS and
OPS. Yeah.
OPS. Oh, operations per second. Yeah. So honestly, you'd have to ask the engineers specific reason why we have the two different acronyms.
Okay.
I'm sure there's an excellent reason, but in fact, let me just ping them and ask them the
Okay.
question.
I was just wondering if there is a different idea behind, a different concept behind there, to use other metric for these measurements.
Yeah,
But
for
anyhow,
sure.
yeah, 22,000 is really impressive, yeah. So
Yeah, we think yeah, that I mean that can host a there's a lot of people who like to use the analogy how many double decker buses, like when they're sizing something, sort of strange metrics like that. But we could host several DYDXs on say simultaneously. So and that's exactly the kind of application we're looking to host here, really.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Yeah, so you mentioned Cosmos as an ecosystem, and I think one of the major features of Cosmos is the IBC. I think Say will also be interconnected through the IBC to the Cosmos world. What are your plans in terms of sharing liquidity or connect with other IBC chains?
We think IBC is another one of those time-tested communication protocols, and we think there's a lot of opportunity here. There's some innovations coming out, like interchain accounts. So interchain accounts are very interesting because you can send a token plus a message from one chain to another, execute some kind of action, some kind of transaction on that chain, and then receive tokens back on your home chain. So that really means we can have quite interesting strategies running in between different chains. for example, like if you have an application chain that's sort of suited for NFTs like Stargaze, you can interact with that. And perhaps they set up a satellite instance of Stargaze on your chain, but in reality, they route trades back through theirs. Obviously, that's something we try to avoid a little bit, but it's an option that's certainly available for people if they want to build that out on Say. Noting, of course, Say is permissionless, and anybody can build anything on top. So that's one opportunity there. There are people who are building out sort of cross-chain arbitrage bots, and IBC for sure sort of facilitates this idea of having like a hub chain and spokes. If you look at Astroport, for example, something they've proposed there, they call it the SLAM model. I can't remember what exactly SLAM stands for, but it's they've got several AMMs on different chains, and they can sort of allocate liquidity between them based on like where it makes the most sense and where it's required. So some of it's virtual, some of it's real, but that you can have these very interesting sort of cross-chain management and cross-chain automated strategies that are running permissionlessly using IBC and interchain accounts. The very interesting part, which is coming into play, is things like interchain security. So Atom is by far the largest in terms of market cap, in terms of the value of the token itself, which is, as we know, with proof of stake, that means it's going to be more difficult for someone to execute like a 51% or a 33% attack on Cosmos. So if you share your security with the hub chain, this is the theory, you can secure like a smaller chain, and that chain uses the same set of validators as the hub chain, and they pay sort of a small tax basically to sort of compensate the Atom validators for looking after them. We're not personally going to do that, but it's something that's available and sort of very, like, these are the interesting developments that are coming out on Cosmos, which we think are cool. In terms of like, we're definitely going to have interoperability with other chains, and we're talking to a bunch of teams about what that might look like for sure.
Great. Yeah. So you're building, let's say, the base infrastructure for other applications, yeah, to build on top. So which applications do you like to see in future based on your network?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's an absolute, there's a crazy number who've sort of co-marketed with us. And you're going to see probably in the next, couple of months, on Atlantic 2, we're going to roll out and showcase some of the applications that we'll be launching at State Mainnet. So we're going to have liquid staking, lending, perps exchanges, sort of GMX style perps exchanges. We're going to have NFT marketplaces. We're going to have real world assets, so they're like tokenized houses, and there's kind of very interesting novel primitives like that. Synthetics, I think, might be turning up. So like all of these sort of essential DeFi primitives will exist, and NFT marketplaces as well. And I know of one team that's actually building out quite an interesting idea, which is to facilitate sort of esports leagues and to facilitate like the exchange of like in-game items as well, which is really, really cool. And this is the kind of application, like, people tend to think about saying, they tend to think about DeFi, but truly it's any kind of exchange, which includes like exchanging NFTs, which can sort of find a home on Say. And this is the thing, like, if you look at chains like Immutable, and a big part of their pitch there is scalable, and they can build out a specific layer 3 chain for your game. Well, why not come and live on Say directly and be fully synchronous and fully composable with all of the other applications and all the other primitives that exist there? That's something that we're encouraging as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So I have seen that also a project is building a layer 2 on top of your platform. Could you tell us a little bit more about this approach?
Yeah. So Nitro is an interesting project because they're building an optimistic roll-up on top of Say. And the idea with Nitro is their execution environment will be the Solana, the SVM C-level execution environment. And it's a nice idea because it allows Solana developers who might want to come and interact with the IBC ecosystem and with Say to redeploy their contracts over on Nitro, and basically, yeah, that you just have like out of the box everything that's built on Solana, except now it's on a dedicated chain, which quite frankly will have a Web2 like experience in terms of like throughput and in terms of time to finality, and that settles back to say as sort of the economic in terms of fraud proofs. So that's I'm quite bullish on the idea of having these specific execution layers operating on layer twos, which use safer fraud proofs. That's in the long term, I think, personally, I would like to see new modules being built out on Cosmos, which allow for apps written in Move or SVM or EVM to exist on Say and to be fully synchronous and composable with all the contracts written in Cosmos as well. That's something that I think I would like to see in the future.
Great, yeah, great. It's kind of ironic, yeah, if you look back to the origin story of Solana, and I think that was exactly the base idea behind the construct, yeah, to create a decentralized platform, yeah, with NASDAQ level transaction speed, yeah, to provide this trading infrastructure. And now everything moves over, yeah, with also this layer two on Nitro. So what do you think was the reason why this idea doesn't worked out for Solana?
Well, I think like Solana for sure like has a very strong developer community, and I think they'll probably do pretty well like post FTX, and I think just because of the number of people still building there. But for sure, by like, NFTs kind of took over. that's for sure. It's almost it's staggering how to what extent. I think it's partly. Serum was sort of like this base order book infrastructure that everything else used. It would probably be better to build that actually into the chain itself, if possible, rather than sort of as an application separate from the chain. I think that's partly it. But I don't think Solana's necessarily failed, or you know, it's definitely got it's got some legs, and I think it's still got a pretty decent future. The reason for NFTs taking over, I couldn't say. I don't really know. I think that's just kind of what took hold and what became popular, and through the like what was popular in the last bull run was the overriding use case and the thing that people wanted to use Solana for, which is fine. And I suppose there was some issues with like downtime, which makes people nervous about what trying to execute advanced trading strategies and things like that. But I don't necessarily think that was the key reason. Yeah, but I think if we're looking at Say and thinking about this kind of hotspot problem that plagued Solana a little bit, I think by taking some of this MEV off chain, that's something that we can. That's one way that we can sort of improve on that Solana experience. Which is something we've been working on quite a bit. And this sort of redistribution of MEV fees to like the bad MEV fees back out to delegators and into the validators.
I see. Yep, it's really really hard to estimate. Yeah, the direction a project will go. Yeah, in. In Web3, everything is dynamic and change quite fast. So let's see how Solana will evolve in the next months and years. But the original vision wasn't quite achieved yet. So I think that's also a good possibility now, a good option for Say to take over this trading related application area. And I think there's a high demand, and a lot of liquidity that you could also capture here, in your system and in create a new base layer for those applications. So what I also want to ask you is related to the the decentralization. Yeah, so at Solana, we often hear that they are quite centralized in terms of their hardware requirements, and there are only a few players, yeah, that can host their infrastructure. Could you give us a little overview about your validator requirements and how many validators you will have at the final stage, and how decentralized Say is?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, yeah, it's the requirements to run a validator in Say will be higher than it will be on Ethereum, and that's purely because of the design decisions that we've made when optimizing for trading in the first instance. So fully decentralized, you know, we'll have a set. We're still like determining the optimal size of that initial set, but it's probably going to be in the range of 30 to 50. There are benefits, like, and this is something that we're still I think the final decision is to be made, but there are benefits to co-location and having these validators a little bit closer together geographically. That being said, you know, that does introduce quite a lot of complexity and geographically, you know what makes sense, what region of the world makes sense to co-locate validators, and obviously we have to arrange that. So or rather the Say Foundation has to arrange it. So that's something that we're cognizant of. I think a lot of this is still a little bit TBC, if I'm honest, in terms of like, I think all the hardware requirements can be found on our docs, if people want to look those up and decide if they'd like to get involved. That being said, like, you know, we've run these first two testnets, and the guys who have kind of been along with us on that journey and have sort of gone through and tested out the network and sort of ironed out any bugs with us. You know, we've got a lot of confidence in the set we've got here, who've been working on the testnet, and hopefully we'll see them on mainnet as well.
Yeah, I think that's very important, especially at the beginning, to bootstrap the network with trusted partners. Yeah, so that's a really good approach, to also reward the early supporters of the system. So what about the community aspect here? So I've seen you have a very active Discord server, and you already launched several NFT drops. How important is the community in this application?
Yeah, huge. I mean, the amount of support and the amount of people getting involved in our ambassador program is huge, and we think it's a really important part of like the entire sort of like decentralized Say project. Is to have that strong ambassador program and advocates for Say sort of in place. And they're doing a ton of work. Like, people are making songs, you know, writing songs and creating metaverse games and sort of loads and loads of content all the time, which is really awesome to see. So, and if anybody would like to get involved, of course, you know, the ambassador program, then just hop into the Say Discord and all the information should be at hand. And I mean, we're starting to get that real sort of core community together pre-mainnet, which is great to see. And I'm sure we're starting to encourage people to start running some events in the local areas. And you know, it's just really awesome to see. You know, when we were looking back at when we started building, well, at least when Say started, it was very end of the last bull market. And when I joined the team or started building on Say, it was just over a year ago. So like, you can imagine sort of like pits of the bear market to where we are now. It's just like mind-blowing really to see how many people are getting involved and how much excitement there is, and really grateful to see it, to be honest.
That's great. Yeah, so how big is the team currently?
Yeah, we've got 19 folks, of which 9 are engineers and 10 are growth, quote unquote, which really is everything but engineering. So of those 9 engineers, mainly guys from Databricks and Robinhood, so sort of Silicon Valley pedigree types. On the growth team, we've got 10 of us. And, you know, that's a good mix of folks like, I guess, myself, who are sort of quite crypto native, been building in crypto for a while. And we also have guys like Jeff, who is more sort of like on the TradFi. He's got backgrounds from Goldman and Couture, So he's bringing another element to the team. So a good group of engineers who are pretty proficient in distributed systems. I think we raised last September, and if anyone wants to read sort of the article around that, and we got backed by a few notable VCs like, you know, Multicoin, who are quite involved in Solana. I'm very happy to have them on board. And those guys, they've put together a $70 million ecosystem and liquidity fund, which if anybody wants to build on top of Say, can apply to get access to some of that for their seed round. So yeah, we've got some good support there on that side too.
That's great. Wow, yeah. Talking about support and funds, do you also offer some developer grants for early adopters or early developers building on top of Say?
So far we've not issued out any grants to teams building on top of Say just yet. And that I think is one we looked out and we saw sort of the approach of our layer ones. And sort of like, how effective were those grants and how effective was it to hand tokens out to teams? And we thought that it's better to sort of self-select for the kinds of teams that want to build on top of the architecture that we're building and the environment that we're building. So we haven't handed out any grants just yet. The Say Foundation will have a full list of RFPs and teams can apply to sort of take those on and build those projects out and apply for the appropriate amount of Say tokens from the foundation to launch those projects on Say mainnet.
I see. Yeah, I think it's good. Yeah, to think wisely about how to spend those funds. Yeah, and that's a really interesting approach. Yeah, because we see it quite often. Yeah, that projects just throwing around with money. Yeah, without any structure or plan, and that sometimes not really the best idea. Yeah, so if you like, we can dive a little bit into the community questions now. So we have quite some interesting things here, and
sure, sounds good.
We can go through the list. Yeah, so let me start. Do you see any risk that at mass adoption with too many order book exchanges operating simultaneously on top of Say that there will be some congestion issue?
So I guess the first part there about mass adoption and sort of like, or rather maybe liquidity division between different DEXs. We think that it's likely like there will obviously be quite a few different teams deploying their own exchanges. But what we've seen on previous layer one chains is that just a few kind of like rise to the top and become like the default places that and de facto places that people are using, whether that's because they have the deepest liquidity or because they have the best user experience, or the teams have just kind of, you know, put together the right incentives to get people to use them. So I think what we'll probably see is that maybe, you know, two or three do rise to the top just based on past experience of looking at other layer ones. I've forgotten the second part of the question. You have to remind me.
if there is a problem with congestion, yeah, that the throughput maybe is not enough, yeah, to host too many in parallel. Yeah?
So I think if we have a congestion problem, we've done extremely well, like outstandingly well, just based on like the theoretical limits we're talking about, sort of like 22K transactions per second. That would be, you know, I mean, that would be pretty unprecedented. And what I mean to say is we should quite comfortably handle sort of existing DeFi volumes, you know, looking at DYDX for as a sort of a benchmark. We can handle that several times over on Say's infrastructure, so we should be well positioned from that point of view.
Okay, amazing. In terms of price feeds, what oracles does Say rely on?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. So to start with, we're going to use a very similar solution to the Terra native oracle. So validators will be asked to provide a price feed for just a few key sort of essential assets, such as Atom, ETH, Bitcoin. Beyond that, we have teams who are building out full sort of suites of high frequency Oracle solutions. So of those, can I name them? I think, yeah, with Stork, we're speaking to Pith, we're speaking to Switchboard, we're speaking to a whole bunch of teams here about who's going to be the best partner there. And at least one of them is going to deploy their entire solution just to our Atlantic 2 testnet for everybody to try out. So yeah, we'll have a good range of Oracle feeds at an appropriate sort of frequency to facilitate perps exchanges and those kinds of things. I really like the, you know, like the Skeins network sort of GMX style perps exchange. I think that those are super interesting products, and obviously they've got extremely good product market fit. But they obviously require like a very dependable and highly high frequency Oracle feed to facilitate those. So that's something we're very aware of for sure.
Amazing. Yeah. I think that's also one of the core components, yeah, in the whole ecosystem. Yeah. So that needs to be reliable. And I think, I guess you will have enough measures also to handle Oracle outage and mispricing situations. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's something we're super, super aware of.
Great, great. So next question is, since Say is IBC enabled, will this allow for trading the tokens from IBC enabled chains on Say natively? And will the non-IBC tokens be wrapped?
Yep, you'll be able to trade native CW20 tokens from any Cosmos chain. And yeah, so native Cosmos assets will all be tradable on Say. We think that the current suite of Cosmos assets is good, but there are a few things that are missing. So we're working with some teams, some partners to bring some other interesting assets across that don't currently exist in a format that we think are optimal. And what I mean to say that, so things like wrapped Bitcoin, we don't want double wrapped Bitcoin, you know, so like that kind of stuff, we're for sure working on those kinds of solutions to make sure that we have all of those base assets. So, you know, we don't have some disadvantage to an EVM chain, you know, in that respect, like in terms of the variety of assets and the kind of assets that you might want to hold, or you might want to do certain strategies with. That's something we're working on as well.
I see. Concerning this token bridges, yeah. What are your plans to bridge to other ecosystems like Solana, Near, or other EVM chains?
Yeah, we're working with a couple of partners on that front. So we have Axelar integrated into our testnet, and they just released Squid, which will also be working with Say, multi-chain as well. We'll have them integrated into our testnet pretty shortly. So between the two of those, we get pretty good coverage. And in future, we have some more ideas, which I probably can't talk about just now. But just making it completely seamless from the user perspective to come and use Say.
Great. Thank you. So next question is, how does Say plan on taking advantage of interchain accounts and interchain security once they are live on the Cosmos Hub?
We're pretty excited about interchain accounts, just in terms of the kind of strategies that they open up, and cross-chain arb, and all these kinds of very interesting strategies. It also, if you're coming from the perspective of another layer one chain on Cosmos, you kind of want to preserve the volume on your chain. But, you know, there's obviously upside to integrating with something on Say. But now that means you can do that without sort of sacrificing and saying, well, we're just going to go and deploy an app on Say instead of running an app chain, right? So some teams will want to, some teams do want to run strategies using protocols on Say, or perhaps the DEX module on Say, and then root tokens back to their home chains. And that's something that, you know, is really cool to see. And that's kind of like one of the main benefits of running an IBC enabled chain in the first place. Interchain security is also something that's pretty interesting. We probably won't use that from the gate, but we won't use that straight away if we ever do. It's something that I think you know, later down the line, if the community were proposing something like, say, providing security itself and having consumer chains using, say, security, like that's the kind of interesting idea that the community might want to push for in the future.
Amazing. Amazing, yeah. So next question is, how is the DAG integrated in your infrastructure and is it essential for parallelization?
Blimey. That is possibly even a question I might have to defer to my engineering team to answer properly.
Don't worry. Yeah.
That's what I'll do.
Yeah, we have some really technical people in our community, yeah, so sometimes it's a bit too deep into the bits and bytes. But we can, I think, also ask those questions afterwards in your Discord. Yeah,
exactly. If you have questions about the specific implementation of parallelization and things like this, and whether directly the credit graphs are the right use case or like yeah, so all of these things, definitely come into the Discord and ask the engineering team. I am but a lowly growth team member, so I defer to them and their giga brains on such questions.
Awesome. So another question was related to the transaction order bundling. Could you tell us a little bit more about this process? How does this transaction order bundling work, and what are the advantages of this process?
Yeah. So every single block. Essentially, when in fact, I think the best way to frame this is to sort of look at MEV as a sort of a general piece. So for anyone who's sort of new to MEV, it stands for maximal extractable value. So it's essentially that's money a block producer can make by changing the order of transactions in that block. So say there's a simple problem on chain and the first person to answer something like 2+2 gets $1,000, just a simple example. The problem is there's only one person who can win it at the front of the block. So the block producer can decide who wins that and the order of that block, however they want to and who's going to get that prize. So that's one piece here. So perhaps there's an example here of malicious MEV, which is front running. So let's say I want to buy one ETH and the price is currently $1,500. I'll have to buy at $1,500 plus or minus 1% slippage. So I'm willing to pay $1,515, I think. Is that right? more than $1,500. If you place two transactions in front of mine, so buying the asset for $1,500 and secondly selling it for $1,515, and my transaction comes afterwards, you've made a riskless $15 and I'm sad because I've got the worst price. So in traditional financial markets, it's totally illegal, not really ethical. But we kind of solve this with frequent batch auctions. So that basically takes for every single block, every single market order that goes through the DEX module, it will settle back to like the average price of that block. So there's not like a difference in price across the different orders that get settled in that block. And that sort of solves for the front running piece. And then for like just the wider, like, because that doesn't necessarily solve every single piece of the MEV puzzle by any stretch. For any other sort of first one who gets their order placed, makes money type, like sort of liquidations and things like that, we redistribute that to an off-chain node. So everyone who knows the answer to 2+2 can then submit that bid off-chain. And if you lose the bidding war, we discard your transaction and you lose no gas. So whatever bid you make gets distributed then to the stakers and validators, and all of this helps prevent spam and lost gas. But that's kind of like just the piece on why we do the frequent batch auctioning and how it sort of fits into the wider MEV piece.
I see. Yeah, MEV is a really hot topic, yeah. I think on every chain, yeah, currently. So, now we have a really interesting question. Do you see any AMM-based exchanges building on top of, say, in future?
Oh, definitely. I mean, from a product perspective, and my background is predominantly sort of the product stuff. AMMs are by far and away easier to bootstrap liquidity on than order book DEX is. With an order book DEX, you need either a sophisticated bot or a market maker sort of placing limit orders all the time. So you have this big sort of cold start problem with order book based DEXs, which you don't have with an AMM. So I would suggest, and what I predict, is that AMMs will actually have the lion's share of volume to start with until the cold start is sort of overcome by order book based DEXs. And that's just like my opinion on that, of course. But yeah, AMMs for sure will have a big part to play. And I think, I mean, a lot of the evolution of AMMs recently has been towards something like, you know, Uniswap V3, and it's closer and closer to an order book where you have more like concentrated liquidity and things like that. So I know of a couple of teams building out some kind of concentrated liquidity solution on top of Say, which is really cool to see because it doesn't really exist on Cosmos just yet, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, that kind of stuff I think is super relevant and forms a big part of a number of different strategies people might want to run.
Mm-hmm. Do you see let's say a trend for the future that the AMM will be replaced or let's say pushed back by this order book style concepts?
I think in the long run that seems somewhat likely. However, I think a number of like these innovations are being made right now to AMMs to make them more and more sort of attractive. So, I mean, right now, as you all kind of know, providing liquidity on an AMM DEX is deeply unattractive. You're probably going to lose money. So by making it more efficient and making it more sort of interesting for people to provide liquidity, that you know, just because it's so easy to do, I suspect that there'll be some kind of advanced AMM looking out into the horizon here, some kind of advanced AMM, which is truly like truly a good idea for someone to provide liquidity to and isn't going to get them wrecked by impermanent loss. But mm-hmm. It's probably then going to trend towards an order book, just the market making piece is automated in some interesting way that doesn't rely on centralized entities, right? I think there's going to be a point where AMMs trend towards the order book, but then there's the benefit, of course, to having like an automated market maker in the truest sense, not just multiplying two numbers, but truly an automated market maker. Perhaps, I mean, I don't want to say AI here. AI is a buzzword, but AI really could play a part in this. If you have to have an intelligent agent sort of placing limit orders, right? That's essentially what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you can democratize access to that and you can say, all right, well, nobody has like a distinct advantage here. There's always going to be little pieces of advantage to sort of eke out. But, you know, for the most part, we've got a pretty decent deal here for the majority of people to provide liquidity. That feels like a good place to go. Of course, I'm sure Jay could give you a very good idea of where he thinks that's going to, but that's just my humble opinion for the time being.
Amazing, yeah, thank you. So I think that's the final question here concerning regulations. Yeah, do you see any risks of yeah regulations in future? Because I think many regions are currently negotiating internally how to handle those Web3 stuff. And do you have any plan in terms of requirements for KYC for users and so on?
So I think like when it comes to regulations, obviously Say Labs, we are a group who's sort of developing that first instance of the Say network blockchain. And then it will be an open source, decentralized, permissionless project that anyone could contribute to, including Say Labs. So in terms of like requiring KYC, I don't think that unless all operating blockchains are sort of like it's kind of been placed on the validator nodes, you know, sort of like if you're running a validator node on a blockchain that's and there's some sort of strange legislation or regulation that's sort of placed upon you, then you have to consider that as a validator for sure. But I don't think, you know, who knows really on that side of things. We're definitely at the frontier. I know I live in Europe, so I think it's somewhat clearer here. There's sort of a unified bill that the European Parliament's kind of come up with, which is good. But for my colleagues over in the US, for sure, a little bit more clarity would be nice. But yeah, being on the frontier of technology, of course, regulation and all associated things is something we have to be keenly aware of. And so, you know, this is, you know, say labs are a single contributor to the chain, then you will have the Say Foundation who will dictate token grants, how the tokens distributed in the first place, all of these sort of things. So something we're keenly aware of for sure.
Okay, amazing. Yeah, I think regulations are required and necessary, also for many sectors, to have clarity how to handle those assets. And I hope that everything will turn out fine in future with the European and the US regulations. But I think the whole topic is unstoppable. So it's just a question of time until we figure out a way how to interact here on a global space to have a decentralized future here in every sector.
Definitely. Perfect. It's difficult to know how to regulate it well. I think that's why we haven't got the answer just yet, but that's for sure part of it. It's been an interesting week, let's put it that way.
Those agencies work slowly, so it will take time, but I think at the end it will be a big boost also for the whole industry, if there is some clarity. So Grover, thank you very much. I think we are at the end of our question list here. Maybe there are some exciting new milestones ahead, or how can listeners or the community contribute to your testnet or project at all?
There's a whole bunch of stuff. And by the way, thanks for the questions. These are some of the sharpest questions I've ever had in the AMA. So
you did pretty well. You did pretty well for not a developer. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely. You'll always get a better answer from Jay on some of those questions. But the ways you can get involved. So first of all, we're actually going to announce a first load test for Atlantic 2, which is another NFT mint here. So there will be a mint on Atlantic 2. I think we're announcing it at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So consider yourselves informed in advance. Beyond that, we've got a whole series of missions coming up from next Monday. So we're going to start running, basically showcasing the different applications that we'll launch on Say, and you can get involved and some points on our incentivized testnet. So it's probably worth your time to get involved. And then equally, just you come across, and if you want to, you know, start to meet some of the community members, get involved with our ambassador program and learn a bit more about that, then join our Discord. And there's a ton of people in there who can steer you in the right direction.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, we'll join in. So I'm following the discussions since a while on your Discord. So how can listeners follow Say Network besides the Discord server, other social medias?
Yeah, we got Twitter. So if you hop on to, I think it's at Say Network. I'm going to just verify that's correct. Yes, it is at Say Network. We're still in Denver because Twitter won't let us change our name. But that might become a bit of a running joke for quite a few teams, I think. And
you're NFT PFP signed?
You mean my profile picture here? This is just a creation. It's just a creation. But I think all you guys who are interested in NFTs, there will be for sure NFT projects minting out on Say, and I'm pretty sure some of them have discussed handing out whitelists and that sort of thing, even as early as testnet. So yes, keep your eyes peeled for early to these various NFT schemes which are being run.
Amazing. So Grover, it was really a pleasure talking to you. It was very interesting to hear more about Say Network. And thank you very much for your time. Yeah. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And yeah, to all the listeners, please like and retweet the spaces here. We want to spread the word about this really interesting project. Yeah. And thank you very much for joining in. Till next time. See you. Bye.
Cheers. Thanks.
This recording has been prepared and made available by VVV. It is for informational purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation to sell, buy or subscribe to any financial instruments or products. VVV does not express any opinion as to the present or future price of any instrument mentioned in this recording. The information provided in this recording is believed to be valid and accurate on the date it is first published, but VVV, along with its directors, officers and employees, does not accept any liability for any loss arising from the use of this information, as it may change in the future without notice. Any decision made by a party after listening to this recording shall be on the basis of its own research and not based on the information and opinions provided by VVV.